Good afternoon. It's Wednesday, the 19th September 2018, just after 1 o'clock. Welcome to UK Column News. Your host today, Mike Robinson, myself, Brian Gerrish, and we're delighted to be joined by David Ellis from Strategic Defence Initiatives. Well, there's only one starting place today, I think, and that's Idlib.
Well, of course, on the 7th of September, Vladimir Putin was in Tehran for a summit on Idlib, and of course, he was meeting with Erdogan from Turkey, and also obviously the Iranians were there as well. They were hosting it. Well, that was followed up on Monday this week with a meeting in Sochi, where they decided, well, they agreed plans for a ceasefire, for a deconfliction zone in Idlib, and so this is many people saying that it leaves the fate of the terrorists and it, you know, a bit in a, up in the air. It's not really clear. Well, in fact, it seems to be pretty clear to me, because what they're saying is that you know, these terrorists represented a threat both to the city of Aleppo and to our military facilities in Syria. He's pretty clear in his position in it. Turkey's pretty clear in his position in it. The Iranian foreign minister had this to say: intensive, responsible diplomacy over the last few weeks pursued in my visits to Ankara and Damascus, followed by the Iran-Russia-Turkey summit in Tehran and the meeting in Sochi, succeeding in averting war in Idlib, with a firm commitment to fight extremist terror. Well, this is what the Turkish foreign minister said: the borders of Idlib will be protected under the memorandum of understanding signed in Sochi. Terrorist groups will be removed from the area. So if the fate of terrorist groups is a bit up in the air, Brian, perhaps it's because the term removed is not necessarily defined in this case, at least not publicly. But it looks like Turkey and Russia, well, they've decided that they're going to require heavy weapons to be removed from certain areas by the 10th of October. And so what it seems, what it looks like, is that they're attempting to corral terrorists into a single location,
To get them to declare themselves as to what they are, whether they're terrorists who are prepared to lay down their arms and make an exit from the battlefield, or they're going to stay on and be removed. But just fascinating to watch the angst building up in the West, that this plan seems to me to be what the West said it wanted, which is slow things down so that the civilian populations could be protected. This appears to be what Russia has done, but no, this isn't right, because the West's favourite terrorists are still in a bad position.
Absolutely.
David, perhaps we should ask for your opinion on this little one.
You've got a crucible there now of the truth, haven't you? And the truth is going to manifest itself in only one of two ways. Stop and go, or if you stay, there's going to be a fight. And if you put yourself in the mindset of a Russian, you can clearly see their position. And if you put yourself in the mindset of the thing that's running the Western partnership now, you can see where they are. So it's very, very apparent what's going to happen. What can you say, you know, that on a military side, probably on a financial side, keep an eye on the price of gold.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you for that. Well, I've just got to bring in this one because, of course, we're already seeing the Western press get its knickers in a twist over this deal between Russia and Turkey. Here's the Independent: expect the worst. Russia-Turkey deal over military buffer zone in Syria's Idlib met with skepticism. Well, of course, the West is sceptical because they're going to do their best to disrupt this deal. But I just found this fascinating because whilst the Independent is prepared to report this, they seem to have a short memory, because here we are back in 2017. The plan, the great global F-35 procurement and operations plan, was that UK's F-35 jets were going to be serviced in Turkey. And back then they were saying, we're a little bit worried about this. And I think probably they're very worried about it now. But it's difficult to know who the friend and who the foe is. I think probably the main foe is Lockheed Martin.
We've got to remember, of course, the United States still refusing to permit F-35 parts and jets to actually go to Turkey at all. So if there's no F-35 parts, aside from any relationship with the Russians here, Brian, you've got to ask, if they've got no parts, how can they fulfil their contract?
It's all getting tricky, isn't it?
Very.
It seems to me that the globalist industrial military agenda has outpaced what's actually, or tried to outpace what's been happening on the ground. But in that BBC article, of course, we had former Minister for War, Michael Fallon. Now, he didn't say this directly. It was an anonymous MOD spokesman, but this is what was said. F-35 is an international program with maintenance and repair hubs in Europe, North America, Asia Pacific, and a global support network that ensures security of supply for all involved. The UK, along with the other F-35 partner nations, benefit from this approach and the efficiencies it delivers. This is really outstanding stuff, isn't it, when you look at it? And luckily, I was able to get a little bit of a sneak preview at what was really said between President Putin and Erdogan. And this is what I think was said. That's great. We'll supply Turkey with S-400 missiles to shoot down the F-35s. And you give us the Lockheed F-35 engine servicing subcontract to repair what's left.
Excellent.
David, if this wasn't so serious, we could perhaps laugh at it. But UK column has repeatedly said we're in la-la land. We are in Alice in Wonderland politics. It is utterly bizarre what is going on. Of course, it's no wonder that we've got nearly a third of Britain's MPs having to have some mental health counselling. That's what we've been told over the last few days. Our MPs need to have mindfulness training in order to cope with the job. But the reality is that they can't cope with the job. We're seeing breakdown. This isn't an educated thought process. This is somebody on drugs.
Yeah, this is subterfuge. This is some Zerkzong, you know, all you Cold War military guys, get your manuals back out, because this is the modus operandi. Where the F-35 is concerned, it's really the pinnacle of the industrial unification policy. So there's all the key words in the strap lines of this thing that are all apparent, where we're seeing all over the defence scene and all over the military scene, joint being one of them. Global. And the reason that they were going for this unified approach to the way it would be built, flown, run, operated, serviced, and so on, that's on a joint unit. Well, it's unified. Yeah. If we cancel out the language, that it's global, because, you know, the idea, I think, must have been, you know, we can fly it from here and there and everywhere. We don't see countries. We don't see national militaries. We don't see nations. It's just a big blob. And we're going to have this universal tool called an F-35, and it will be going hopping in and out all over the place, conducting global, one of the strap words in there, warfare. Yep. This is absolutely a sitter. Can nobody see it? Now, let me tell you one thing. This thing isn't a Harrier jump jet. It's not a Hawker Siddeley Harrier jump jet. This is a completely different bunny, all right? You know, what did we do? We walked away from all of that in 2010. We got rid of it all for 10 pence, and we've gone in with this other thing because there wasn't the resistance. There wasn't the analysis. The MPs didn't read their papers. They've not done their job, and they're the only instrument available to the nation to do anything about this, and they haven't done anything about it. And that's why we're in the mess we're in now.
Okay. Okay, we're going to be coming back to our MPs later in the news.
Okay, let's move on to Trump and the United States. It's quite an interesting story. It began on Monday, late afternoon on Monday. White Office Press Secretary released a statement saying, at the request of a number of committees of Congress and for reasons of transparency, the President has directed the Office of the Director of National Intelligence and the Department of Justice, including the FBI, to provide for the immediate declassification of the following materials. Pages 10 to 12 and 17 to 34 of the June 2017 application to the FISA court in the matter of Carter W. Page. All FBI reports of interviews with Bruce G. Orr prepared in connection with the Russia investigation, and all FBI reports of interviews prepared in connection with all Carter Page visa applications. In addition, President Donald J. Trump has directed the Department of Justice, including the FBI, to publicly release all text messages relating to the Russia investigation without redaction of James Comey, Andrew McCabe, Peter Strzok, Lisa Page and Bruce Orr. Now, this has really done the business, as it were, because, well, NBC, when they were covering this, said this has caught the intelligence agencies off guard, and it remained unclear Monday whether national security professionals would have any opportunity to challenge any aspect of the decision. The Democrats, they're going nuts as well. The president has no right to undermine the investigation into his campaign or pursue vendettas against political enemies. That was Senator Mark Warner. So they're clearly panicking about this. Adam Schiff, then, the House Intelligence Committee member, said he hoped that the Department of Justice and FBI might be able to stop the release of these documents. So here's a tweet. President Trump has intervened again in a pending investigation by ordering the selective disclosure of classified materials he believes to be helpful to his defense. The Department of Justice and FBI have previously informed me that release of some of this information would cross a red line. So there we go. We're talking about a red line. Then Brennan, on speaking to MSNBC, said he was hoping that individuals of conscience are going to stop and prevent this release because he's concerned that this is just one indication that Donald Trump is going to increasingly look for steps to take in order to further try to subvert the Mueller investigation. So this is all going on. More press coverage. This is from Business Insider here. Off the charts. This is the headline. Off the charts. National security experts sound the alarm after Trump moves to selectively declassify the Carter Page visa application. They're quoting a former FBI agent, Frank Montoya, who, of course, is a supporter of James Comey. And he's saying that the FISA process is secret for a reason, to protect sources and methods. Well, of course, what sources and methods is he talking about? He's talking about Christopher Steele and his cabal of ex-MI6 sources, in inverted commas, and he ultimately wrote the dodgy dossier that we know about. But we also know there's a second dodgy dossier which hasn't been published. Montoya went on to say that publicly disclosing more details of the Carter Page visa application could not only compromise such information but risk the US relationship with its partners in the intelligence community, and saying, no question, we're crossing a major red line if we do that. We cannot do our work without those sources. So they're obviously extremely concerned we're going to start, or at least the United States is going to start annoying British intelligence here. Well, it gets better because Nellie Orr, the wife of Brian Orr, who's the Justice Department official, she's going to be interviewed during the week by the House Judiciary and Government Oversight Committee about the work that she has done during the 2016 presidential campaign for Fusion GPS. Fusion GPS, of course, the employer of Christopher Steele. And we've got to keep in mind here, Brian, and remember that, of course, it's not just Christopher Steele that was in this little cabal. Richard Dearlove's name appears. Pablo Miller is, of course, the name that nobody is allowed to mention. There's certainly none of the British mainstream press are intending to mention that name. And I believe there hasn't been mention of Pablo Miller for quite some time in the US press either. And of course, this all connects to the Skripals, because Pablo Miller was Sergei Skripal's handler. Yeah. So how this all works together, we don't know yet. There's clearly some kind of criminal conspiracy going on. And this all links to the attempts to get rid of Trump through the Mueller-gate investigation, the Russiagate investigation. It's spectacular, though, how it's all coming apart at the seams at the moment.
Yeah, we've got this orchestrated chaos appearing in the UK between the inside the Conservative Party for Brexit. We've got Labour, all of the trouble around the so-called anti-Semitism label. So utter chaos in UK politics, and then by a miraculous coincidence, we got out of chaos unfolding in American politics. Mm. Probably not accidental.
No, but of course the other big issue surrounding Trump that people are complaining about in the British press is the trade issue, the so-called trade war that's going on at the moment. Well, this is James Nolte writing in CGTN, Chinese Press. He's a professor at New York University. He's a senior fellow at the World Policy Institute. And he's suggesting that, in fact, Trump is not pursuing a trade war, that he's doing something quite different. He said he understands that the Chinese leaders would be annoyed and bewildered by Trump's tactics. But what he says is what Trump wants is not more reform in the direction of liberal principles. What he wants is to preserve what he considers key American industries. He does not want free trade. He wants managed trade. He says in American policies, so in politics, free trade is a necessary mantra. Advocating government managed trade is an anathema, especially in the Republican Party. But he mentions the fact that, of course, what Trump is up to is what some people have called in the past an industrial policy. This is once supported by even the Democrats during the 1970s and 80s. They were known as the smokestack Democrats. But he's saying that former Democrat Trump probably harks back to industrial policy previously advocated by these Democratic leaders. He disdains liberal policies in favor of negotiated results. This is the inspiration behind his campaign rhetoric that so resonated with industrial workers in middle America, perplexing bi-coastal liberals like candidate Hillary Clinton and House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. Trump speaks a language no longer in fashion in either party. It's somewhat cryptic to the uninitiated. It must be translated for those ignorant of American political history. So that puts a slightly different spin on it than certainly Western media is attempting to put on. And we watch with interest how this pans out. But certainly James Nolte suggesting that there's more to this than meets the eye.
Okay, well, I'll add this one in, Mike. We've only just picked up on this morning, so no doubt there's a lot more to look at, but it was a fascinating headline. It's The Guardian, and it says right-wing think tanks unveil radical plan for US-UK Brexit trade deal. Groups linked to Trump and Fox want foreign competition in NHS and regulations bonfire. Now, I picked up on the NHS bit. I found this absolutely fascinating because, of course, ultimately, it's not the fault of the American firms who want a slice of the NHS action. It's the fault of our own devious politicians that are giving the NHS away. But this is some of the stuff that was stated. A radical blueprint for a free trade deal between the UK and the US that would see the NHS open to foreign competition, a bonfire of consumer and environmental regulations and freedom of movement between the two countries for workers is to be launched by prominent Brexiteers. I'll ask Dave Ellis comment on that in a minute, but that almost seems to be making UK the US aircraft carrier. We just simply don't have borders. We just mix the people. Close links. Liam Fox gets a big mention. And then this paragraph here said the policy initiative was shaped in consultation with a group of other conservative libertarian think tanks on both sides of the Atlantic. The blueprint explains these include UK organisations whose funding is opaque, such as the Institute for Economic Affairs, Adam Smith Institute, amongst others in the UK, and others in the US, including the Heritage Foundation, American Enterprise Institute, and the Competitive Enterprise Institute. Now, I find this fascinating that The Guardian is actually pointing a finger at some of these organisations and saying, well, who are they? But what we can clearly see is that the NHS is going to come under attack. David, very quickly.
Well, just before we go to David, I just want to comment on this because they're suggesting that this is groups linked to Trump and that these groups are promoting free trade. Donald Trump is now, aside from what is said in that article for Chinese press, if we look at what Donald Trump is doing with NAFTA at the moment, Brian, it's pretty clear he is pursuing something which is 180 degrees away from a free trade policy. That's what's hinted in this article. This is, to me, this is just British Guardian nonsense again. This is not reality, what they're presenting. This is what they would like to see, but it's not what actually is going to happen.
Can I accept that? The bit I will stick on, though, is the fact that they are saying, who are these think tanks that are helping to drive the policy?
Absolutely.
And that's a point that we've often pushed at. David, just very quickly on this one, what's your take?
It's very straightforward. Parliament, this is the job of Parliament. This is what our MPs are supposed to be doing. This is what we fought the Civil War for, is in order that the Parliament would make just policy and just law for the nation. Now, it's not the job of these people to go off on these third-party subcontracting sort of policy benders that we're seeing all over the place, like we've seen with Jeremy Corbyn having policy written by a German think tank. It should be his own MPs doing that on behalf of the people that they represent. And the same for the others. This is a nonsense because we're seeing it time and time again. And the problem with it is, of course, when these, you know, let's say that they've completely misinterpreted what they're supposed to be doing as an MP. When they go off half cocked like this to all these different groups that have all other interests other than that of the people, they have a corporate and a financial interest, and that is where we have the variance. The people's interest is not the same as the corporate interest and the money. They're two different things. And all the while these MPs go off and do that, this is going to cause more trouble. And of course, this sort of notion here that Fox is on is no different to this 53rd state stuff that we had in the 80s. It's a rerun of that. And I'll say, you know, all things considered, Mike, you're completely correct. It isn't joined up thinking at all. It's not of the now, and it's not really focusing on where we want to be. Just as a sort of, you know, let's throw this in the hat. Let's say that the Russians sink the Harry S. Truman out there in the Med. What will America do? Have they thought that one through? You know, we're going to go in with America on this basis. Heads up, everyone. We're about to have an escalation. There's certainly mobilization. We can see that. But they're not thinking it through. So what on earth is Fox doing with this? You know, he needs to be reined in, as will all the others. Come back and do your job, which is represent the people. That's what you're there for. And make the policy in Parliament, not in a separate building elsewhere or in a separate country. It needs to be done in there.
Yep, David, we're going to come back onto this subject in a minute, having a look at hidden influences behind the British government. But just to end the NHS segment, as it were, an advert for a really outstanding conference. This is Sunday, the 11th of November this year. Now, this has been organised by Christina England, who has done so much tremendous work to warn about the dangers of vaccines. She has got a range of very good speakers. The venue is W11, so at the moment the venue is not announced. Now, we can understand why this is, because UK Column, amongst other things, has been warning that under the Prevent legislation, if you dare try and book a venue to discuss things which the British government doesn't like, you are likely to have that venue taken away. So the venue will be announced. All we can say at the moment, it should be somewhere in W11. And the day is £30. That includes refreshments. So if you can attend, please do. If you can't, please help us to advertise this event, because these people, we will have a look at the speakers in more detail in coming days, but they need maximum support.
OK, now on Monday afternoon, what took place? A meeting between NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg and the delightful Federica Mogherini, who's the High Representative for the European Union on Foreign Affairs. What took place in this meeting? We don't know. We don't know because there's no information whatsoever. The press release said there will be no media opportunity. It went on to say still and video images of the meeting will be available on the NATO website after the event. When a year after the event, they're certainly not there yet, and we're now 3 days after two days after the event. So the professional quality videos and B-roll, they said, would be available and download from the website. Well, that's all. What you've just seen is all that is available at this point. We do not know what the contents of this meeting were. We can surmise, David, that this was more conversation about NATO and EU military unification. But of course, we don't know, because this is apparently the contents of this meeting are secret.
Well, how convenient. You know, you've got all this escalation there on the one hand, and then those two are sitting there effectively unifying the two systems, the two structures, the two concepts into one whole force, a joint force, a unified force, a force in union. You know, nonetheless, it equates to the same thing. It equates to military union, whether that be national militaries that make up NATO. You've now got them effectively having all their sovereignty surrendered, sitting there at the table with Federica Mogherini, a fellow of the Marshall Plan, I understand. And they're effectively talking about rolling the forces all into one. So you can see how the conversations are taking place there. And the reason for that is there is no resistance in Parliament to stop it. Parliament could stop this quite simply. It would take two or three MPs to stand up and start it, and it would be there. So the whole concept that we've seen on an internal basis with our own military is now of a whole force, or let's be plain speaking now, a unified force. It's no longer Her Majesty's Armed Services, Army, Navy, Air Force, and so on. It's just one force. And that force within NATO is effectively, they're sat around the table there talking to Mogherini about going into military union. That's why are they there?
Yep.
Because it's out in the open now. Germany's called for more and genuine. And this is it. We're there, you know.
David, let's look at some of the things that you've been warning about for some time. And a lot of this, we'll call it a dialogue, has been going on over Twitter. But nevertheless, this is pretty powerful stuff. This is one man who has been of great interest, Major General Charlie Stickland, Royal Marines. Now, we tweeted this out. You prompted us on it, but we tweeted this out a couple of months ago, where to my mind, he was acting like a schoolboy. So he's promoting himself, writing his report, getting ready to brief the EU Political and Security Committee on EU NAV for over brackets our recent achievements. I just found this nauseating, and particularly that he would be prepared to stand gloating next to the EU flag. Now, you also picked up on this one, another tweet. Pleasure to meet Vice Admiral Ben Key at the Northwood HQ as we discussed maritime security in our 10th year of counter-piracy operation. 10 years and they still can't get rid of a few pirates with machine guns in dugout canoes. But what you pointed out here is we seem to have at least got the national flag back alongside the European Ring of Stars. This, what can you tell us about this?
What's happened here is, of course, is that Brian and I, you know, we've looked at this for quite some time since Lieutenant General David Leakey, head of EU military staff, despite the fact at the time there was a denial that there was no EU military. So that's an oxymoron, isn't it? Even for the likes of members of the Defence, Conservative members of the Defence Committee. So what we've seen here, we've seen for quite some time, a great deal of promotion here at joint, another lovely word again, joint headquarters there at Northwood, Royal Navy Northwood, with EU NAV4, and all stood in front of EU flags. So since we've had this public outcry, public pressure developed from pushing the three-para insignia issue, where they had EU insignia, we've seen this reaction. We've seen this reaction now at Northwood. I've had quite a good go on Twitter with Royal Marines and officers. And what we found is that there's definitely been a reaction. And this, you can clearly see, is the reaction. So whilst we think we've got a hive of the senior officers' Twitter feeds being conducted from a single point somewhere in media propaganda control in Whitehall, the lower ranking officers are running their own feeds, probably wherever they're geographically sited on their own. And some of these Royal Marines, so thank you to them, have gone, hang on a minute, this guy's right, where's the Union flag there? And they've gone and put it there. So this is working. People are now talking. You know, this is apparent. You know, we've seen that EU flag there with British officers in British officer uniform. stood there for quite some time, 5-6 years or more now, we've been looking at this. And now all of a sudden, a bit of pressure, we've got a Union flag. People are starting this. Maybe they're starting to think what's going on. So the analogy I made was, well, what would happen if we put an EU flag on the Tower of London for all the public to see? What would happen? There would, of course, be an outcry like you've never seen. But of course, no one can see there in Northwood. It isn't open to the public. This is not on mainstream media. The general public and the 17.4 million people, as you quite rightly alluded to, Brian, have not seen this. But a little bit of pressure here amongst some of the Brexit groups and the Brexit people and campaigning, and this has happened. So what it's telling us is we need to do more.
Yeah, we need to do more. Now, this is very encouraging because Veterans for Britain has been pushing out some interesting tweets as well. People need to go to their Twitter page to read this stuff for themselves. But they've put up quite a lot of organisational charts to show what's happening at higher levels, not only of the British military, but this unification with the EU. This is part of the comment on the Veterans for Britain Twitter site. In the diagram, capability window, research window and PADR are parts of the European Defence Fund mentioned in the Chequers plan. The UK is participating in PADR and currently in all the rest, including CFM below it. All inextricably linked according to EU Commission rules. And then they've got this. It's all agreed since October 2016. A member state militaries are in the process of aligning under it politically, financially and structurally. So this is exactly what you've been talking about, David. They've even pushed this one out, pointing out that Churchill wasn't suggesting that we became part of the EU. We were to get along as allies but not be taken over by them. There's quite a lot of discussion around that, but we seem to have a change of heart. We're seeing Veterans for Britain gearing up to warn people about what's really happening.
Yeah, exactly right. You know, hats off there to Major General Julian Thompson, Royal Marines, Admiral Roger Lane Knott for pushing through this. And what they're doing, they've got the benefit of being able to put up the component form that makes up in a matrix now, because it's becoming a bigger picture as we see the list of the things that are required in order to conduct full military union or defence union. So what they're doing is they're putting up, you know, the fleshing out of this component form. So I'm calling that a matrix. So if you look on their lead Twitter feed, you'll see a lovely honeycomb diagram with all of the sections that the EU are making and the structure to effect military union, defence union. So it's, as we've said, it's a bureaucratic elephant. Imagine how, you know, it's a massive undertaking. But, you know, they're doing it. It's happening. And the key thing is, of course, is despite Brexit, despite the vote, it's the only thing that's been agreed prior to Brexit campaign, during the Brexit campaign and subsequent to the vote and the instructions to leave the EU, that this still is being agreed to. There is nothing happening in the cabinet to stop it at all.
Right. So, well, let's go on through this a little bit more and have a look at a particular politician, Stuart Andrews. So we've got a tweet here where the EU Defence Agency is crowing that there's been a good meeting between the European Defence Agency Chief Jord Domek and the Minister for Defence Procurement, Stuart Andrew, yesterday. And there's the picture of them shaking hands. So the government's talking Brexit. There is no Brexit, and certainly not in a military sense. Absolutely not. I went to have a look at this minister. So we go and see what he said on his own Twitter page. And you get a different angle. So it's softer and it's suddenly introduced NATO. So we can see that meeting where he's really dealing with the EU. But you look on his Twitter page and all of a sudden he's drifted in NATO. And he's got, I think that's the Danish defence minister. He's obviously very smitten with her. I was fascinated by some of the comments that people had made in relation to this tweet. Hove 71 said, whilst letting thousands of economic migrants flooding our countries, now they talk about security. They create a problem and then have a solution. One army and the EU will lead. So somebody was on the button there. And then down at the bottom, it gets interesting because they're talking about the cuts in the Dutch army. Here in Holland, our army had huge cuts. There's not much left of our army. And Gary, the economist, says, I know the Dutch army well. One friend is a former general, now retired. And yes, I remember the cuts. They were awful. Just look what they've done in the UK. So like many countries in Europe. So these are the cuts that were made in order to bring in EU military unification. We had to get the armed forces on parity in order to help them slot together. This MP being absolutely hypocritical, devious. This is the major part of his Twitter page where he's boasting that he's been supporting the Rifles who got freedom of the city of Leeds. And so he's friend of the troops, but behind the scenes, what is he actually part of? Utter deception. It's just horrific to see this stuff now, David.
It's open on their Twitter feeds. This is what's great about this. So you can get such a great snapshot. It's easy to access. It's quick. You know, you've got sifting capability to search. You know, this is a really good example here. And Brian, obviously, you and I have seen this time and time again with these the duplicit MPs. We've seen it with David Cameron. We've seen it with Theresa May. Day one, Monday, they go and cozy up to a load of troops, get some nice photographs. You know, it's almost like kissing babies, isn't it? You know, we go and get some nice photographs. 2 days later, they're off doing deals. So they're perpetrating on the one hand, condemning on the other, you know, or cozying up on the one hand and perpetrating on the other, whichever suits them. You know, so let's focus in here on this cutscene. I'm glad you mentioned that. You know, let's get the debate started now. What we've gone through in this country for decades was not cuts. It was a unification process, because all of the other countries now are now seeing it, that this has become, you know, as one has gone down, the other has come up. The graphs have intersected now. We can all see it. So they're on that Twitter, those replies. Brilliant, because people are saying what needs to be said. And believe you me, putting this on these feeds works. There's where, you know, you're not having an internal conversation. You're having a conversation with them. They've got to start feeling the public pressure.
Yep.
Clearly there you can see with this MP, NATO, EU, same thing.
Right.
It's a unified thing. It's a blob now. It's a whole force.
OK, David, I'm just going to hold you to a few seconds, really, on these two. But I think they are important. This one from Navy Recognition saying that India's launched its second ballistic nuclear submarine. So this is India really coming up with the other world nuclear parties. Now, we could have a discussion as to whether that's desirable. I've put in there with a cynical comment, really, is this been produced with free British steel? Because, of course, our steel industry has been wiped out. Tata Steel has come in. And the other one I'll just pop on the screen is trouble at Jaguar Land Rover plant. Just a couple of seconds on this because the clock's ticking.
Yeah, really quickly. So Jaguar Land Rover, for some time, they've been setting up plants elsewhere, you know, predominantly India, you know, and I've got first-hand sort of source on that with somebody that's sitting under the board that's going in. So this is not new. It's been happening for some time. They've gradually been setting up these other plants. They've gradually been tapering and adapting the way that things are done there at Solihull and so on. So we've seen 1,000 agency workers laid off very recently, and now they're putting 2,000 people onto short time. So what people have got to realise here is there is a lot going on in India at the moment. And on the big engineering fronts, like building a strategic ballistic missile manufacturing program and the missiles that will go in there, the ICBMs as well. So, you know, there's a huge amount of capital engineering going on in there. And it is all, as you quite rightly said, it's all related to the same steel and engineering process. So Tata is involved with that, along with the other people within effectively their group. So, you know, let's try and view this problem that we've got objectively by looking at the bigger picture. And And I'm afraid to say it, but I've been told so many times by so many different people that Solihull will close. Right. It is a fait accompli, but it is a question of when and what happens politically during that period. You know, don't hold me to a time. I have no idea when. But it seems to be that that is the huge amount of anecdotal traffic that I'm receiving on this subject.
OK, David, we'll have to return to this subject. It is an important one. We need to move on now. Thank you very much for taking us through that.
OK. Theresa May was speaking last night at a pro-Israel event. I just wanted to go through some of the things she said, because it's very, very interesting. She said, "I've come here tonight as Prime Minister of our country to say that I stand with you." This is the Jewish community in Britain. "I stand with the UJIA. I stand with Israel as the homeland of the Jewish people. And I stand with the entire Jewish community in Britain." Later on, she said, "I know some of our Jewish community say they are fearful of the future. I saw the poll on the front page of the Jewish Chronicle, and it sickens me that anyone should feel that in our country." She said, "If we are to stand up for the values that we share, then one of the things we need to do is to give young Jewish people the confidence to be proud of their identity as British, Jewish and Zionist too. Indeed, one of the most sickening aspects of anti-Semitism that tries apparently to suggest Israel is a racist endeavour is that those voices seek to separate the Jewish diaspora in our country from their connection with Israel. For I'm not just proud to support Israel, I'm proud of our role in the creation of Israel, and I want to build the strongest and deepest possible relationship between our two countries." I thought that's what you wanted to do between Britain and the European Union, but apparently not, better with Israel. "So I am clear that we will always support Israel's right to defend itself. And in a world where Britain and Israel increasingly face the same shared challenges and threats, I'm just as clear that our security services will continue to deepen their excellent cooperation to keep all our people safe. And like everyone here tonight, I want to see progress towards a lasting peace, a peace that must be based on a two-state solution, with a safe and secure Israel alongside a viable and sovereign Palestinian state." That was the only sort of thing she said in the other direction. Everything else was absolutely supportive and pro-Israeli policy. "Under my leadership in the UK," she said, "the UK will always be a real and trusted partner for Israel, supporting Israel's security and prosperity, not just through our words, but also through our actions. So too, I will act to stand with our Jewish community by rooting out the scourge of anti-Semitism here in our own country, just as I will stand with every community in Britain to fight racial and religious hatred in any form. Let me be clear, you cannot claim to be tackling racism if you're not tackling anti-Semitism. Criticising the actions of Israel is never and can never be an excuse for questioning Israel's right to exist, any more than criticising Britain's actions could be an excuse for questioning our right to exist." She also lauded the fact that, Brian, that Israel had helped the White Helmets escape from problems from southern Syria when they got into difficulties there. So unbelievably gushing towards a foreign country and supportive of all the policies of that foreign country, it seems. But it must be a matter of concern if what we're doing, and she's admitting that what we're doing, is merging the security and intelligence services of Britain and Israel in this way.
It's incredibly dangerous, Mike. And I think people of this country have got to start asking a lot more questions about the power and influence of Israel in British politics. If we weren't talking Israel, I often say if we were talking Italy, for example, and we were saying that Italy is helping to form British foreign policy, internal British policy, or perhaps that pressure coming through the Vatican, people would be saying, what is going on here? But Theresa May stood up and gushed, as you've said. But let's just remind ourselves that only a couple of years ago, what did we have? Well, we had the young David Cameron saying that his support for Israel was unbreakable. We took him on at this and said, well, basically, who's your master? What did he say? My belief in Israel is unshakable. I'm proud of the key role Conservative Friends of Israel plays within our party. And of course, what do the Conservative Friends of Israel do? They boast of their ability to influence the Conservative Party and thus British politics to bring in what the preferred Israeli agenda is. So basically, Syrian regime change, we know that's Israeli policy. Is that what's really happening in UK now? It's not British formed policy. This is dictated Israeli policy. Here is one of the magazines, CFI, Conservative Friends of Israel, Informed magazine, 2013-14. And who have we got? Well, we've got a lot of people. We've got David Cameron featured. We've got Francis Maude. We've got William Hague, Liam Fox. And of course, Liam Fox is now in the middle of all these so-called new trade deals. Is this for Britain or is it for Israel? Sajid Javid appears in it. George Osborne. Well, OK, so former chancellor there, powerful man. But who is he working for? The public of Great Britain, or is he working for the government and public of Israel? That's a question. If asking that question causes the British government some difficulty, so be it. But are they really British politicians? We don't know. We've no idea of knowing who these people are working for. And when we start to look at what's happened over the last few years, Malcolm Rifkin ended up being effectively pushed out of his job for some fairly, what do we call it, strange dealings with businesses. People, some people talking about corruption, but this was the man with immense control over our parliamentary intelligence and security committees, the same for young William Hague. And there was Cameron, Prime Minister, saying the same thing. So all Conservative Friends of Israel, are they really working for UK? We don't know. And then Francis Maude himself, a great friend of Israel, brought together this incredible network of the intelligence services, linking everybody from GCHQ with the equivalent in Israel, plus British police training in Israel. Can't be an accident. David, 10 seconds to close.
Where Rifkind is concerned, I was very fortunate to meet a wing commander who had the privilege of flying him around as defence minister. And this wing commander used quite a lot of expletives in describing Mr. Rifkind on the basis of an argument that ensued about the plane being broke that he was using out there and he couldn't get back. And he said, well, if you get me another plane, I'll fly you. But at the moment, we can't go anywhere. And a huge onslaught of verbal abuse ensued. So that I always think is the sort of measure of what we're dealing with. But where Theresa May is concerned and these other MPs, they're elected on the basis of representing their constituents in Parliament. And that is the fundamental. So in terms of what we're dealing with here, I've very fortunately got a memo to Brexit from a former head of Royal Navy underwater battle space. I'm going to call him Admiral X because he doesn't want to be revealed by name. And this is on the basis of Nelson's memo to Fleet in order to break the line. And it goes like this. To all Brexit groups, all you have to do is go into your MP as a group and demand that we leave the EU. Under no circumstances should you have a conversation amongst yourselves. So this is the advice we've got from somebody that knows about this sort of quite supernational stuff. I'm going to take his word for it. And he's saying that this is the way that we will break the party line. So there you go. It's very straightforward. Get a group of you together, 5, 10, 20 people, go into your MP and demand that we leave the EU. That's it.
That's it. David, thank you very much for that. I'll just add to that, of course, always be reasonable and polite, but you can still be forceful. But pressure needs to be brought to bear. Treason in UK is the theme we'll end on today's news. We'll be back on Friday to follow some of these subjects through. Thank you very much for joining us. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.